Okay, welcome to the Matthew Aaron Show. I am Matthew Aaron, and we were having another coronavirus edition of the show. You may be like, wow, you've put out more shows this week than you've put out in months. Well, got nothing to do, so other than writing. But I'm here with Bruce Frett. By the way, you can follow us on Twitter, at Matt Aaron Show, Facebook, The Matthew Aaron Show. And of course, on Spotify is the new hot place that we seem to be getting a ton of listeners at, which is at the Matthew Aaron Show as well. So if you're a Spotify listener, that seems to be the place. But I'm here with Bruce Frett, our dear old friend. You may have seen him in our film Landline. I wish you would have been in our other films, too.
I wish, too.
I know. Well, especially The Way We Talk, which is actually a really good film. I really love that movie. And yeah. I always wish we had you in there, but we never had the money at that time. Not that we have money now either, but it was much lower scale.
Very expensive.
Yeah. And I'm excited. I'd love to do another project so I can see you act again.
I would love to do that too, man. I can't wait.
Yeah, I mean, it's been really, since it's kind of distracted us from doing other projects. And it's just, we haven't gotten anything done since then, which has been very rough. So we're having some connectivity issues here on the Spotify, or not Spotify, on the, Skype. I had to learn how to use Skype to do this today with Bruce. So and I know what everyone's thinking. We've been using Skype for 10 years. And I'm like, yep, you probably have been. I have not.
I haven't either. It's pretty new to me, too. So we're both learning.
That's part of isolating yourself from the world way before it was cool, is we have no clue about Skype. So we're going to talk about today. And it's great to have Bruce on because, as everyone knows, Bruce has always been the TV guru for us. And I was telling Bruce I was on the phone with Pat Tobias, who produces this show, and he does a great job at it, and he's the most patient man I've ever met, and I love Pat to death. But Pat and I, we were like, what are you watching during your isolation? And Pat and I realized we have not seen a bajillion shows. And I told him, you know, I'm very torn because nowadays I'm staring at a lot of 3, 4, 7 season shows I've never seen. And the most annoying thing in the world is when you have and by the way, this is all subjective, so don't get mad at me for my opinion. But for instance, you have a Ray Donovan, which for 3 seasons I really enjoyed. And then I stopped really enjoying it. And then you get annoyed because you're like, I don't have time for 4 more seasons of something I mildly enjoy. Or Weeds, great 3 seasons, final 4 I could live without. And I just feel like I don't want to waste my time. So we're going to talk to Bruce about some of these shows that have been around a while. Yes. And then we'll talk about new ones too. But for the ones that have been around a while, so here's the list that Pat and I were talking about. Amazon just released this week season 6 of Bosch.
Yes.
Is it worth watching 6 seasons of that show?
Bosch is my favorite show on television.
Wow.
Which is not the same thing as the best.
Sure, sure.
But it's my favorite.
It's like Justified, where it was my favorite, but it may have not been Sopranos. I get it. Yeah.
Right. So I've spent the last 3 months or so reading the Bosch books.
Okay.
And I haven't read books in years, but I've read 20 Bosch books. There are 22 Bosch books.
Wow.
And I am 20th of the 22 Bosch books right as season 6 is starting. And I'm totally living in a Bosch universe.
Okay.
And the thing about Bosch is it's a show made for me.
Okay.
It's like everything I love. It's a gritty crime drama. It's great character actors, Titus Welliver, Lance Reddick. I mean, up and down the line, the whole cast is just people
Lance
who are
Reddick's
you know, Nick Searcy level, you know, character actors.
Yeah.
And great dialogue, you know, and just great atmosphere. I mean, it's, you know, Eric Overmyer, who worked on Homicide and The Wire, is the showrunner. It's fantastic. And it's just perfect modern LA noir. You know, it doesn't take itself too seriously. But it's very enjoyable, and I can't recommend it highly enough. It's just, if you like, you know, urban gritty crime dramas, it's like crack, you okay. know, and every season is based on a different one of the books. It's interesting to read the books and to compare because the characters are completely different other than Bosch on the series in the books. There are characters who have been on the whole series who just kind of come and go in the books. But, you know, Michael Connelly, the author, is very involved in the series.
Wow.
So if you're books, you won't be disappointed. Even if you haven't read the books, you'll still love it. But yeah, Bosch is my number one pick. And there's two more seasons to come.
So I love that Bruce and I have not talked about this in advance. I had no clue Bosch was his favorite show. It was something I was staring at today, and I'm like, is it worth six seasons? Because there's a lot of seasons. So I'm like, is it worth six seasons? And you're saying, hell yes. Totally worth six seasons.
It's a very consistent show. It doesn't have a lot of, you know, good seasons, bad seasons. You know, it's much more consistent than Ray Donovan, for example.
Ray Donovan or Goliath.
Goliath, yeah. I mean, it's similar to Goliath in a way. I would put them in the same category. I mean, in that, you know, it's just so juicy. You know, it's like giving great actors great dialogue. You know, there's nothing better than that as far as I'm concerned. Well,
I feel like that Sons of Anarchy turn for Titus Welliver really lit his career up. And I think that's how he got Bosch, right?
Yeah, I mean, going back to Deadwood, he was great on that show. Sure. You know, a lot of the Milch shows, he was kind of a Milch guy.
Yeah.
And this is not a Milch show, so it doesn't have the, you know, abstruse quality that Milch brings.
Sure.
God bless. But this is much more mainstream, you know, right down the middle, but just absolutely, you know, very high quality on every level of the production. So, yeah, it turned Titus Welliver from a character actor into a leading actor, and I love seeing stuff like that. It reminds me of the 70s when you had, you know, guys like Dustin Hoffman and Al Pacino becoming stars.
Yeah,
you know, that's kind of like what happened to Welliver.
He's a great actor. Okay, so Bosch is a can't miss. Definitely check out Bosch. Okay, another show that just premiered again this week, Westworld. Now, I've heard mixed things, but from the people that love it, they love it. And from the people that don't, they really don't. Is it your typical mixed J.J. Abrams bag, or is it really as good as people want to say it is?
Well, I got to say, I broke up with Westworld in season two.
Okay.
I liked the first season. I stuck with it, but I'm not a sci-fi guy, and I lose interest very easily if it's not grounded in reality. And I lost track of the plot in season two. I haven't gone back to watch season three yet. I know Aaron Paul is on it now, and that's a big draw. So I love him from Breaking Bad, but I got to say Westworld is not at the top of my list of things to check out again because I felt like I got burned by it. You know, I felt like they had one good season and then they kind of didn't know what to do with it after that.
See, so for me, I the thing that intrigues me about Westworld is they kind of have a rotating cast outside of Evan Rachel Wood. It seems sometimes you have Jeffrey Wright. You had Anthony Hopkins in the first season and James Marsden. And then it mixes up. And now you got Aaron Paul, who's so they seem to be trying to reinvent themselves every season. But what you're saying is season two got so off track for you in your view that it was just you dropped it.
Yeah, it lost me. I mean, it was too much like, you know, too many parallel realities going on at the same time. You know, it's the kind of thing that you can't half-ass a show like that. You're either all in or you're not in at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, I full disclosure, and I know people will think I'm insane for this, I did the same thing with Game of Thrones. I broke up with it in season two.
No, so
you know,
I
stayed season one, and then the dragon showed up, and I'm like, dragons, sorry. Dragons.
I love that was you and I. You know, I this is hyperbole out of me, but I have a rule, no costume dramas. So I gave Game of Thrones a moment, and as soon as that dragon showed up, I'm like, see ya.
Exactly.
I'm out.
Exactly. Well, that's the thing. I mean, there's so much TV right now that you have to perform some kind of triage.
Yeah.
You can't watch it all. So if there are certain genres that you can just say, you know what, this genre is not for me. Other people love it. I want to focus on, for me, the realistic dramas, the realistic comedies, anything that gets too outlandish. I'm going to let other people watch
because that's what we're doing here today.
I love it. It doesn't speak to me. I don't identify with it.
Now, since you're so hard on sci-fi, since sci-fi is so difficult for you to get sucked into, is there a sci-fi show right now that you're like, now this one is great, goes above and beyond for me?
I watched Devs on FX on Hulu.
Okay.
Which is Alex Garland, you know, who made Annihilation and Ex Machina. And I made it all the way through the 8 episodes.
Okay.
And largely what carried me through was I love Garland's visual style. He's got this kind of the Kubrickian, you know, sort of mixture of like nature and technology. And I absolutely loved Nick Offerman in it. And I'm not a big Nick Offerman guy. I was not a huge Parks and Recreation fan. I felt like his character was kind of one-dimensional and overrated on Parks and Recreation. But he is so fantastic in this, playing such a different character. He plays this, you know, tech mogul who's sort of haunted by this loss in his past. And it's just like, it's a revelation. I love seeing actors like that who've done one thing and you think, oh, that's what they do. And then you see them do just something completely different.
Okay.
So I recommend Devs because even though it deals with technology, it's only like sort of a half second into the future.
Have you gotten to see the War of the Worlds on Epics?
I didn't watch War of the Worlds. It looked a little too much of an international co-production to me. It looked like one of those shows that, like, you know, the people that you recognize are going to be in one scene, an episode, and the rest is going to be a bunch of Bulgarians. And, you know, it didn't appeal to me. So I have not watched that.
Here's one for you that I left off at season 3 for the same reason I haven't finished season 2 of Succession, even though I'm down to like 3 episodes. I guess when Donald Trump got elected into the office, it became less enjoyable to watch shows about rich people getting away with behaving badly.
Yeah.
And Billions is the show I'm alluding to, is one of those shows where after season 3, and this would be 2017, there was just, or 2018 maybe, there was just so much Donald Trump in my life that watching Billions was no longer fun. It was not Shakespearean anymore. I didn't think these characters were going to get their comeumpance at any time. Yeah. Like Succession. I don't think they're going to get their comeumpance in that show. So I don't want to watch. Has Billions gotten better? Am I being too hard on Billions? Should I catch up on Billions?
You and I are in exactly the same boat.
Yeah.
I loved Billions the first season.
Yep.
I love Paul Giamatti. I can watch Paul Giamatti in just about anything.
Same
thing with Brian Cox in Succession. I watched the first season and then I just realized, you know what? I don't care about these people's problems. I just don't. I can't sympathize. You know, I want something a little more down and dirty. I want something a little more that I can identify with.
Well, and there's no characters you can identify with on Succession. There's none.
Yeah. Yeah. Although, again, it's one of those things where, like, I watch the first season and then I give up and then everyone's like, oh, second season's amazing. You should have stuck with it, you know. And for me, it's like, is somebody paying me to watch it? Do I have an assignment? If I have an assignment, I'll watch it. But I have too much stuff that I have to watch for my various jobs that I don't have time to indulge in something unless I really, really love it.
Well, our mutual friend, Peter Tolan, he's the one that got me to watch Succession. He thinks it's the best thing ever made, ever. And you know what? That is a very Peter Tolan show. Like, if you know Peter personally and you know his sense of humor and you know how dry he can be, that's right up his alley. So, yeah, that's okay. But we're on the same page there. I used to love Billions. And I wouldn't say I love it, but I thought it was a really good show.
Yes.
Outside of Damian Lewis chewing scenery, like, whenever he can. And by the way, that's not a shot at him. He's a good actor, but holy cow, does he chew it up when he... I think it's because he really gets into that New York accent of his.
Well, he's cast, you know? He's not a guy who grew up eating at a pizzeria, at a corner pizzeria.
No.
He just isn't. He's a good actor, but he just doesn't look like that kind of guy. He doesn't talk like that kind of guy. And it's just too much of a stretch.
Yeah, I feel like, and by the way, if I'm a creator of a show at Showtime, I would not be complaining. But I do feel like Showtime is not very good at ending a show when it's on top.
Yeah.
Showtime series seem to run a little longer than their expired by date.
Yeah, well, I don't know why Shameless is still on the air, frankly. Shameless, I mean, Shameless has gone on way too long.
Yeah, Shameless is too long. I think because... You know, I follow the ratings here and there, and Shameless is their highest rated show.
Yeah, and it does great on Netflix too.
Right, and then so that's what I'm wondering, because they have shows like the L Word, Generation Q. They got another show that just premiered there, which ratings don't even, they're not even high enough to rank because they're not over 100,000 viewers. Yet they keep renewing the shows, and I'm kind of like, are they doing well on another streaming platform that I don't know about? This whole new world is just Floaty and I were talking about this in the podcast yesterday. It's just crazy where the world, the TV world has changed so much.
Yeah.
It's just a totally different place now. And I don't know why things get renewed or don't get renewed. I think it all comes down to money, but then with some Showtime shows, I'm like, but there's no ratings. So where's the money?
I don't know. Showtime, I got to say, I used to love a lot of Showtime shows.
Yeah, me too.
And they haven't been replacing them with things that I like. I don't like Black Monday. Again, no, it's either a show about big money. I don't care.
Yep.
You know, I don't like Kidding with Jim Carrey. I think they only renewed it because Jim Carrey's in it.
Yep, me too.
You know, I loved Ray Donovan, and I hated the way they ended it so abruptly, and I hope they're going to give it some kind of a, you know, finale, although it was uneven over the years.
I was going to say, so should I catch up on Ray Donovan? I stopped at season 4 where John Voight ran off to Las Vegas, and he's doing ayahuasca somewhere. I don't even remember. It got crazy for me. It got too over the top. Like, I thought the first 2 years of Ray Donovan were great.
Ann was running the show then, and Ann was the creator.
Holderman,
and beat her. But, it took them a couple seasons to kind of catch their footing again. I think once they moved the show to New York two seasons ago, the final two seasons, I thought were much more solid.
Okay.
Reinvented the show, reset it. And, you know, again, it's my kind of show. It's gritty. It's great actors. It's great dialogue.
Yeah.
Even if the plots are a little, you know, shaky here and there, I can forgive that just because I enjoy the scenes in and of themselves so much.
It was great to finally see Liev Schreiber get the acclaim he deserves, because he never quite fit into the leading man role in movies.
No.
But he was always a great actor. It's just this was finally a matching of the right actor with the right part.
Exactly.
And how was Alan Alda in this last season of Donovan?
Alan Alda was fantastic.
Yeah, he's always great. He's always great.
Yeah, he played this therapist who had Parkinson's, so they work that into the show.
Yeah.
You know, he worked with Eddie Marsan's character, who also has Parkinson's. He was a great addition to the show. Now, they didn't overuse him. He only had a couple scenes in each episode. But, you know, it was just sort of akin to his performance in Marriage Story. You know, it's just like you just love him. You know, he just shows up and you're just like, oh, my, this guy, I can't get enough of him. He's just so wonderful.
So you're kind of selling me on catching up on the last four seasons of Ray Donovan.
Just the last two. You can just do the last two.
Really? So I could skip 4 and 5 and miss nothing?
Yeah.
Okay. Another show that I don't know if you've even seen that Pat and I talked about was Mother, Father, Son with Richard Gere.
No, I totally missed that.
It was on the BBC, and I guess it's now on Stars. But
yes.
I haven't gotten to watch it. It's one season, so maybe it's worth binging 8 episodes for. The nice thing about the BBC is they do 6 to 8 episodes, and they're out. They're like, good. Right. That's good for us.
Yeah.
Okay, so you haven't seen that yet. Have you seen – what was the other one we were talking about?
Plot Against America?
No, I did not know about that. What? Tell me about that.
Plot Against America just started on HBO.
Winona Ryder, right?
2 nights ago.
Winona Ryder's in it?
Yeah, it's based on a Philip Roth novel.
Okay, yeah.
By David Simon.
Okay.
So it's this interesting combination of like Philip Roth seen through the eyes of David Simon. It doesn't feel like a David Simon show, which is not a compliment or an insult. I love David Simon. He has a certain feel to all of his shows. This is much more straightforward literary adaptation, but it's as good as the best of David Simon. And it's incredibly relevant. I mean, the book was written in 2004 by Philip Roth as a reaction to the Bush administration, but it's basically – it totally feels relevant to the Trump administration.
I was going to say, I wonder what he would write about today.
I know. So it's set in 1940, and it's an alternate universe thing, which I would normally not go for because that's a little bit sci-fi. But it's just basically one fact changes, which is instead of FDR, Charles Lindbergh is elected president in 1940, and America turns fascist.
Okay.
And so it's all about this, you know, Jewish family in Newark and their reaction to it.
But it's early enough. It's only an episode or two, right, so far? So you could give it a taste.
It just started. It's only going to be six episodes. It's limited.
Okay.
Fantastic cast. Winona Ryder is great in it. John Turturro plays a rabbi from South Carolina who rides a horse. I mean, if that's not enough to sell you on, I don't know what is. but it's basically the way this Jewish family feels watching America turn into basically a Nazi country. It totally sort of resonates with how a lot of people are feeling psychologically watching the U.S. turn into a possibly neo-fascist country under Trump.
Okay.
So it's a perfect combination. It does have costumes because it's set in the 40s, but it's totally not worth it. I would call it costume drama.
Okay. Now, there's two shows on HBO that I love, and I think it's returned to form this year. Curb Your Enthusiasm. What are your thoughts on this season?
Absolutely love Curb Your
Enthusiasm. I think it's one of the best seasons they've done in forever.
Yeah, I just feel like it's what America needs right now, which is, you know, cranky, you know, kind of classic. It almost feels like comfort food because it's been around for so long, but it's got a real strong through line with the Spite store, you know, with Larry opening the shop next to Mocha Joe's.
Yeah, I love that,
I got to say, this week's episode was the only one I was a little disappointing because I thought they leaned a little heavily on the diarrhea humor.
Yeah, that's fair. Cute,
funny diarrhea gags. But
the Mexico episode, though, with Timothy Oliphant.
Yes.
The painting oh, my God. Okay, so there's an episode where Larry gets Jeff's wife a painting. And then for her birthday, which is, you have to see it. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
It's one of the best visual gags you'll see in any comedy in forever. There's an episode where they go to Mexico for a wedding with Larry, and Timothy Oliphant plays a role in it. He doesn't play Timothy Oliphant, which is rare on Curb, but it's great. And then the John Hamm episode is probably going to win every Emmy on the planet, I got to imagine.
Yeah. John Hamm plays himself, but he is researching a role to play a character like Larry David, and he basically morphs into Larry David before our eyes.
Yes.
And it's genius. It's the best thing he's done since Mad Men by far.
Well, when people ask me what my favorite shows are, there's two shows that I tell people to binge. One's on HBO, which is Barry.
I love Barry.
It's incredible. And that show should not work. Like, there's nothing about an assassin who becomes an actor with Henry Winkler involved that screams serio comedy. You know, like, there's nothing about it except it's perfect.
It is absolutely perfect. I mean, Bill Hader, I thought he was as an actor on Saturday Night Live, he's even more brilliant as a writer and a director. And it turns out he's been studying film very closely for all these years.
Yeah.
And who knew? He, you know, the Ronnie Lilly episode, the episode where, you know, Barry has to fight a child assassin. Yes.
I was just crossing that
into surrealism, which again, for me, would normally be over the top, but it's so well shot. It's so well choreographed. It's so dark. Stephen Root. My God. Stephen Root finally gets the role, you know, with the guy who's been brilliant in everything from Office Space to News Radio.
Yeah.
But this has finally kind of put him on the map, finally got an Emmy nomination.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just wonderful. Henry Winkler is wonderful. Yeah. Sarah Goldberg is wonderful. It's like a mini Coen Brothers movie every week.
Yes.
It's comedy version of Breaking Bad in reverse. I mean, it's just it's beyond.
Season two had two moments for me that were two of the greatest moments they've seen all year. This is how good this show is. When there's two moments. One, the Ronnie Lilly episode you speak of, where Barry tells Stephen Root's character that she's jumping in the tree over the house, and Stephen Root doesn't believe him. And Stephen Root walks out of the car and walks over to the house and literally sees her jump from the tree to the roof of the house.
Yeah.
And his reaction is just so amazing. My friend Drew Siragusa and I talk about this episode all the time, where the reactions of Stephen Root, you don't need dialogue, just watch him. Just watch him. He's that great. And the other scene that's amazing is when finally Henry Winkler and Henry Winkler's character and Barry have this heart-to-heart at Henry Winkler's house.
Yeah.
And at the end of the scene, I am spoiling the joke, but trust me, watching it will not spoil it. Henry Winkler basically charges him for the session, like it was an acting class. So here's he's this fatherly figure, but he never forgets who he is, which is this grifting acting teacher.
Henry Winkler has so many great exit lines. Like, I have to imagine
the exit some of their lines. Yes.
But he says something like, he'll look at his watch and be like, "I am so late for my escape room." You know, it's just like random funny references. Yes. And then we haven't even mentioned maybe the funniest character on TV, Anthony Carrigan, is NoHo Hank.
Oh my God, NoHo Hank's the best. NoHo Hank's the best. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I mean, the fact that Anthony Carrigan really does have alopecia and really is hairless and for years was auditioning and trying to cover it up and then finally said, you know what, I'm just going to go in the way that I look. And it's perfect. It's not making fun of him.
No.
It just adds to the character that he's got this kind of bizarre cue ball head and his line readings, his accent. I mean, I would say the most – he's got the highest ratio of lines to laughs on any character on television.
I agree. And watching Barry has made it difficult for me to enjoy the Kaminsky method as much as I want to.
Absolutely. The method is crap compared to Barry.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be because it's Michael Douglas and Alan Arkin.
Yeah.
But then again, it kind of should be because it's Chuck Lorre.
Yeah, the second season of that show, I watched the first season and I'm like, this is it's a low bar, but it's the best Chuck Lorre thing in a long time.
That's true.
Because you got Michael Douglas, you got Alan Arkin.
Yeah.
The second season, I'm just like, every acting studio scene reminds me of Barry.
Yes.
And then I think about how all those scenes are perfect.
Yes.
And now all these scenes are not.
Right.
And I just get taken out of the show and I stopped watching it.
It's not a good show. And I mean, Alan Arkin, to me, again, he's one of those Paul Giamatti kind of actors. Yeah. I will watch Alan Arkin in anything. He can make anything funny. The In-Laws is one of the funniest movies of all time. Yeah. You know, I worship Alan Arkin, and it just makes me sad to watch it because it's just a waste of his talent because, you know, I'm not saying Chuck Lorre is talentless. He's made some good shows over the years, but I think he just spreads himself too thin. And I also think this format – you know, the single camera, no laugh track doesn't really play to his strengths as a writer.
No. And so the second show I tell everyone to watch, which is much like for you, how you have a favorite show but may not be the best show on TV, is for me, it's The Good Fight. Now, however, I will say, asterisks, I've not seen the third season yet. I just haven't sat down and done it. I will say this. What's really interesting about that show, and I'm not sure if you've ever gotten to check it out yet, because I remember during the first season we talked and you hadn't gotten a chance to watch it.
Yeah.
The show has no direction, it feels, but it's great. But it feels totally directionless. They changed the law. It's like Boston Legal. They change the law firm up every year.
Yeah,
new cast every year. Like I'm like, do they know what they're doing? I don't know. But Delroy Lindo is amazing on the show. The cast is great. You got Audra McDonald, who's one of the most unsung talents in TV and film because she's such a Broadway star.
Yeah,
that you don't get to see her as often as you'd like on TV and film, and she's great. So I would say The Good Fight. The other show that I'm into, but it seems people are like love hating it, is Picard.
Anything on CBS All Access.
See, I really was going to ask you, I feel like you're not watching anything CBS All Access.
I'm not. I'm really not. I was not a big Good Wife fan, so I didn't go into The Good Fight. I'm not a Star Trek guy, so I'm not watching Picard.
Wow.
As far as I'm concerned, CBS All Access for me.
I think Picard is the most accessible Star Trek show ever made.
I believe that.
To the degree where if you didn't watch any Star Trek ever, you're fine.
Right.
It plays like, and I think this was on purpose, but they definitely saw Patrick Stewart and Logan.
Exactly. That's what it looks like. Yeah.
And they said, hey, how about you play Hugh Jackman?
Right.
And that's pretty much what it is, but it's different for Star Trek, and I think it's a lot of fun. So I would recommend that to people. What else is on right now? Have you ever seen Insecure? Whitehorn, Michael Whitehorn told me Insecure is one of his favorite shows.
Really?
Yes.
I have not. Okay. I have not kept up with that.
I need to check that out. I love Issa Rae. I think she's a star.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really do. And, you know, HBO's kind of hit and miss when they discover new talent. But I think she is definitely a star.
Yeah, yeah. Have you watched here's one that I wouldn't have thought I was going to like, and I actually loved when I got an assignment to write about it, which always helps when you get paid. But you watched Sex Education on Netflix.
No.
Sex Education is a British show. Netflix.
What's that one?
It's a British show in which Gillian Anderson, who is unbelievably sexy and talented,
we love her.
Plays. It sounds horrible on paper. And even Gillian Anderson, when I interviewed her for The Times about this, admitted it, plays the mother. She's a sex therapist, and she's the mother of a teenage boy. And she's constantly embarrassing him because she's so frank about her sex life. But he takes her advice. He's learned a lot from being around her. So he starts sort of becoming an amateur sex therapist at his high school.
Okay.
And it is absolutely fantastic. It's hilarious. It's a perfect role for Gillian Anderson. And it's just an incredibly positive, very sort of non-judgmental, very, you know, LGBTQIA, asterisk friendly show. And it looks like something that would just be for teenagers. And in fact, my teenage daughter, Olive, loved it and recommended it to me. And then when I got the assignment to interview Gillian Anderson, I watched it. And I blew through all two seasons in one weekend because it's a perfect show for right now too, because it just leaves you feeling great. You know, it's not a show where like everyone's in high school and really mean to each other. There is some of that, but essentially, you know, they all kind of root for each other. It's a beautiful, lovely, funny, witty, charming show. And I don't like the British either. That's another, you know, kind of, sort of a prejudice of mine, as I tend not to watch the British shows. You know, never got into Downton Abbey, that kind of thing. But this is a British show for people who hate British shows. You know, this is a teen show for people who hate teen shows. It's a show for everyone. And I really encourage you. I think you would love it.
Okay.
I really do.
Let's round out the HBO here with I just got done watching The Outsider.
Yes.
It's a breeze. I think it's nine episodes.
Eight.
It's not the greatest show ever made, but it's got really good performances from Cynthia Orvio and Ben Mendelsohn.
Yep.
And to be honest with you, if you like gothic horror thriller type shows, it's good. It combines the best things about a procedural with gothic horror. And so I would recommend The Outsider. It's a breeze.
Yeah, I would
to watch.
Too. I mean, to me, The Outsider is very similar to The Plot Against America in that The Plot Against America is Philip Roth as seen through David Simon. The Outsider is Stephen King as seen through Richard Price.
Yes, yeah,
you know, that's a great, like a Richard Price show. You know, like The Night of. You know, but then it's got this supernatural twist.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, when the supernatural stuff started coming in, I got a little bit antsy, like, but it's Stephen King, so you got to go with it.
And they give you a character that totally relates with you in Ben Mendelsohn.
Yes,
so it helps you kind of stay in it. If you don't believe in supernatural or sci-fi or whatever, the lead character on the show, played by Ben Mendelsohn, who's lost a son and he believes everything, he's very scientific and very reality-based.
Yeah.
He doubts this thing throughout the entire show, so it kind of helps you be like,
exactly.
At least they're grounded in reality with this.
Exactly. And Bateman is great on the show, too, Jason Bateman.
Fantastic.
And another show that I feel like I should love and I don't is Ozark. It was a show that I watched the first season of, and I was like, I really should be loving this. I love Jason Bateman. I love Laura Linney. I love crime. I love the South. And it just didn't do it for me, and I broke up with it. And again, it's a show that people were like, oh, you should have stayed with it. It got great. And I haven't had time to go back and watch it. Did you watch it?
I disagree. Here's where I disagree. I liked the first season. I didn't love it. I liked it. This is one of those shows where everyone's like four stars, and I'm kind of like three stars.
Yeah.
However, that second season that everyone loves, I think is justified light. And
really? That's what I wanted it to be.
But not in a good way. In a way where it's like they borrowed a lot from Justified.
Yes, yes.
But it's so I know they're not ripping that show off, but it feels like such a blatant ripoff of so many storylines I've seen on Justified that I can't watch season two without being like, oh, remember this episode, though, of Justified where similar characters did similar things? And I get it. People wanted their Breaking Bad meets Sopranos of that show.
Right.
It's just not there. It's all right. It's an all right show for me. I think the third season comes out next week even. So that's timely. I will say with HBO, I think they had the best new show of the year and the worst new show of the year. And the best new show of the year for me is Righteous Gemstones. Which,
I'm not a Danny McBride guy. I hate Danny McBride.
Man, have you watched it at all?
I have not.
I think I give all of his other shows a try,
and I just feel like he just doesn't do it for me. He just doesn't laugh.
So it's a laugh a minute for me, that show, and Jimmy Dumont's in it, and he's a friend of mine. And by the way, I had my doubts. I did not watch it at first. It was one of those things where I had a sinus infection in L.A. I was looking for something new to watch, and I'm just like, ah, fuck it. We'll watch Righteous Gemstones. And I ended up loving it. I loved it. And John Goodman is a national treasure. And Walton Goggins he's going to win an Emmy for that show. If he doesn't, there's no justice in the world, which we know.
All right.
But if you like Walton Goggins and if you like John Goodman, it's totally worth giving Danny McBride one more chance. And
all right. I'll give him one more chance.
I'm going to tell you why I'm not promising you you'll like it, but I think this may be different for you than other Danny McBride shows. He plays a character that's tailor-made for him. And just playing this slimy Joel Osteen type guy kind of fits his style, where better than any previous thing I've seen him in.
All right.
So, but if you don't like it, don't worry about it. But I loved it.
Yeah.
The show that I thought was just Euphoria, I hated it.
Oh, I'm with you on that. And my teenage daughter disagrees with me entirely. She thinks it's brilliant.
I heard all the teens disagree with us.
She thinks it's the most realistic thing, you know, this side of eighth grade or, you know. And I don't want to believe it's true. It's so horrifying to me.
It's horrifying. And I just think the storytelling's bad. I just think the storytelling's bad. Yeah. However, Darren Navarro, who's one of the best editors alive, he does all of Billy Friedkin's movies and does a lot of HBO and Showtime shows. And Darren loves it. And, you know, so it just may not be for you and me. But I got to tell you, I hate all the voiceover stuff. I love Zendaya. Yeah. I got to interview her before. She's the sweetest girl you'll ever meet in your life. I think she's great.
I don't believe her as somebody who's like a heroin addict who's just out of rehab.
She's great in the Spider-Man movies.
Pretending like me.
Exactly. I think she's great in the Spider-Man movies. It's hard to buy her in this. And I just felt like I'm watching this thing and I'm like, even if this is how high school is now, God forbid, but even if it is, I'm not interested in this.
I'm not either.
Yeah.
And believe me, as the father of a teenage daughter, I'm really not interested. I would not recommend it to anyone who has teenagers unless you really want to watch it as like a horror film, you know?
Right.
It's just, you know, there are other depictions of like teenage life that I'm enjoying more that all tells me are not that realistic. She thinks sex education is actually very realistic, which is interesting. But it's interesting that it's a positive spin on the way things are. So I would recommend sex education instead. But for example, I just watched the Pete Davidson movie Big Time Adolescence on Hulu.
Yeah.
And I thought it was great.
Okay, Big Time Adolescence was great.
Right.
Yeah. But Olive told me, no, it's not realistic. That's not the way teenagers are, you know. So she's the authority on that. But I got another show to ask you about, because this is a show that I watched – I liked, and then I started the second season, and I broke up with it, but then I went back because I got an assignment for the third season that I loved, which is Glow. Are you a Glow guy?
No, but Chuck is, and Chuck just tried to sell me on it last week, and he goes, because I just wrote a wrestling movie, and Chuck is like, oh, have you watched Glow? It just came up.
Yeah.
He binged it or something, and he goes, it's really good. He goes, there is bad stuff in it. Like, it's not the greatest show ever. Like, there's true. Some episodes where you're like, okay, I'm not as into this as I am into another episode. But he said Mark Maron and Alison Brie are, like, amazing.
And Betty Gilpin.
And Betty Gilpin, who you sold me on, and she's fantastic.
Yes. Yeah, I would just say start on season 3.
Okay.
Skip the first 2 seasons. Definitely skip the second season.
Yeah,
you second could do one bad. Just to, you know, figure out what's going on. And that season 3, I thought, was fantastic. And you know who's terrific in season 3 is Gina Davis.
I love Gina Davis.
Is unbelievably good as this former showgirl turned casino entertainment director. And I don't want to spoil it, but she shows up toward the end in a showgirl outfit. And you're like, I can't believe this woman is 63. I mean, she looks absolutely fantastic.
I didn't even know she was 63 till you brought it up, because I saw her recently in, I don't know if I saw her in something or at one of her, because she does a lot of film festival stuff now.
Yes. Yeah.
She's very involved with female led filmmaking. She's great. She's amazing.
Yeah.
She's a real champion for the business too. And, she looked great. She didn't look 63. Yeah. I'll tell you that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that the only other HBO show I got to ask you about is, the Catherine Hahn show, Mrs. Fletcher.
Yes, I watched that.
So I love Catherine Hahn.
Yeah.
Worth it or not?
It is worth it. It is worth it because it's short. I think it's 8 half-hour episodes. It's a limited series. It's not meant to continue. They're saying they're not planning to do any more. And again, it's another one that's interesting because it shows a teenage perspective and an adult perspective. So it's kind of like a two-track show. So you're watching her dealing with going back into the dating world as a divorcee, and sort of getting involved in kind of kinky, you know, activities. But you're also watching her son, who there's a really interesting transition with her son, where her son graduates high school. And in high school, he's like the big man, you know, all the girls want to be with him. He can be, a jerk to girls and they'll still come with him. And then he goes to college and all of a sudden everyone's PC and he's like a toxic male. And, you know, the stuff that used to work, you know, where he would just treat women like, you know, girls like garbage, all of a sudden he's being almost canceled as a result of. So it's very relevant. It's very timely. And it's very poignant to see these two separate journeys of people sort of navigating the new rules of, you know, sex and dating and relationships. And, it's Tom Perrotta who did The Leftovers, which I didn't love because, again, a little too sci-fi for me. But it's more kind of along the lines of, I think he also wrote Little Children, that movie with Kate Winslet
And Patrick Wilson. And
Jackie Earle Haley, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's not as dark as that. There's, you know, there's no child molestation going on. But, you know, it sort of takes a similar look at kind of like the underside of suburbia. I would recommend it. I mean, if you like Catherine Hahn, especially, because she's fantastic and she's, you know, just couldn't be more naked in it. You know,
I've not watched it, but it sounds like a companion piece to one of my favorite shows, which is Better Things.
I don't watch Better Things. I need to try Better Things.
I think you would really like it.
I probably would.
Especially you're a single parent. I think you could really relate to this show. It's fucking hilarious. It's really, really good.
What stopped me from Better Things was the Louis C.K. connection, because I've never been, even before Louis C.K., you know, it all came out, I'd heard of it.
He's not involved at all anymore. I don't, if you told me he was involved or not involved, I wouldn't be able to tell watching the show.
Yeah. I've never loved Pamela Adlon. I mean, I hated Californication. So, Californication to me is one of the worst shows of the last 10 years.
Yeah. Californication was not good. By the way, another show that never really had a peak, but definitely overstayed its welcome.
Oh my God.
I don't know how that got 7-8 seasons. Yeah, I don't know how that got. I think it was 8 seasons even. I don't remember. But it was an insane amount. But I think you'll love her on Better Things. It's definitely her best work. I just love the show. It's a great, great show. And I guess because there's really nothing else like it on TV, that helps it a lot too. There's not enough shows being made about reality. I feel like things that are happening in real life. Yeah. Like, I'm trying to think if there's anything on network TV I'm loving right now. Is there anything on network TV?
No, There's absolutely nothing. I went back to watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Yeah.
Just because I love the show. I watched it for years with my kids.
Yeah.
I finally stopped watching it last season, but I still record it. And so I watched a bunch of episodes just because I'm sheltered at home with my kids. And it's become comfort food. I mean, it's lost a step.
Okay.
You know, comedically, it's not as smart as it used to be. But I watch absolutely nothing on network TV. I mean, it just, they're not putting out anything interesting.
What, yeah,
you know,
why,
I mean, they just can't compete.
What's the difference? Like, you talking to Floaty yesterday, and we're talking about when he was at NBC with Warren Littlefield and everybody, Third Rock from the Sun, ER, Seinfeld,
yeah.
Like Frasier.
Yeah.
Like, there were literally all the best shows were on network TV.
Yeah.
Why isn't it like that anymore? What happened?
I think they got scared. You know, they were used to having these huge audiences.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it got eaten away by cable and streaming and all these other outlets. So they're like, well, what can we do to hold on to as much of that old pie as we used to have? Let's just go straight down the middle, straight down the mainstream. You know, nothing edgy, nothing offensive, nothing experimental.
Yeah, there's, you know, no Stephen Botchko, no John Wells, no Stephen Botchko.
All, you know, just NCIS shows and Chicago shows. No offense to Chicago, but
they're
not good.
My dad and my sister are watching them right now, and I think they're the biggest load of I hate them.
I
watch those shows, and I'm like, wait a minute, shouldn't TV have progressed, not regressed?
Yeah.
Like,
They just got scared.
Right. They look glossy and good, but there's not one NYPD Blue-esque episode you'll ever see on Chicago PD.
No. Here's another show that I like. I don't know if you watched it or not. Have you watched The Sinner?
No.
USA Network.
Okay.
Interesting
stuff. With Bill Pullman, right?
With Bill Pullman, who is fantastic in the show.
Yeah, he's basically
He carries it through the seasons. It's almost an anthology.
He's really the only recurring character in all three seasons.
He's
really an underrated actor. He's like Liev Schreiber, too, where the leading man thing may have not been for him, but he's killing it when he does TV.
He was meant to be a character actor. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very dark, but it's not so dark that it's like, you know, going to make you want to slit your wrists.
Okay.
Very well acted. Again, it's like it's sort of self-contained, like 8-episode seasons. Jessica Biel, who produced it, was terrific in season one. Season two, Tracy Letts and Carrie Coon, who are married in real life and are both amazing actors, are the stars. And now season three is on and Matt Bomer is the star. And, you know, I'm seeing Matt Bomer in a whole new light. I've never been a big Matt Bomer guy, but he's terrific.
Yeah, he's good. And so is Jessica Biel. And I feel like it's funny because Jessica Biel's best work is in all these indie movies and things that no one's seeing.
Exactly.
People are just thinking that she used to be a movie star who's married to Justin Timberlake, but she's doing all this great work that she hasn't done in forever in the indie sphere. I do want to watch that show. The only other TV I wanted to talk to you about is FX Network, their love affair with Ryan Murphy. I know you and I have both never been into American Horror Story, and I got to tell you something. I have so many friends that are into it, especially in the LGBTQ community, that they have convinced me to try that series out almost every season.
Yeah.
I don't immediately watch it, but I have gone back and like, okay, they swear this is the one. And I'll watch it, and I'm like, this is hot steaming garbage all the time.
Yeah.
However, then he does The People versus OJ, which
he produced it, but it was really Karaszewski and Alexander.
Right, which I thought was fantastic.
Things, but when he's actually the one in charge, it's not the same. I mean, did you see The Politician on Netflix? I mean, what a turd.
It's terrible. I saw one episode, and I'm like, I'm out. But what I was going to ask you about is, I never saw the Versace miniseries.
Yeah.
Worth it?
It's worth it. It's a little too long, and it's a little too heavy on Cunanan, because the thing is, there are entire weeks that go by, episodes that go by, where you don't see Versace. You don't see Edgar Ramirez. You don't see Penelope Cruz, who's terrific. You know, the best thing about Versace are the episodes with Judith Light and Mike Farrell. Mike Farrell plays a closeted gay man who ends up being killed by Cunanan. And it's just from one of those Chicago, things where you're like,
I believe he's from Chicago, right? And there's
it's like BJ Honeycutt. What, you know, who knew? Like he did a little bit of this kind of thing on Desperate Housewives. He had an arc where he played like an evil father-in-law.
Yeah.
But Mike Farrell is like an underrated actor who's got a dark side that you will not believe. I mean, Darren Criss is great as Cunanan, but it's just too much Cunanan. It's like, do you really want to be inside this psycho's head, you know, weeks after weeks after weeks? You really want to see more of like, you know, Ricky Martin as, you know, Versace's lover.
That's what I loved about The People versus OJ is Larry and Scott Alexander and Karaszewski. They did a great job at – Cuba Gooding Jr. is great as OJ, but it's not about OJ.
No.
It's just as much about Bob Shapiro and Marcia Clark and
Travolta was terrible. He was doing Kabuki theater and everyone else was doing, Netflix TV.
In the defense of John Travolta, I have this argument with people a lot. I don't disagree, but in the defense of John Travolta, here is a guy that gets paid a lot of money, but he at least tries 1,000%. He may try too hard.
Sometimes much too hard.
Much too hard occasionally, but he really does care.
He does.
And, I mean, even if you watch his garbage VOD movies, I've seen a few.
I do sometimes.
Yeah. And they're on Stars late at night or whatever.
Yeah.
He really gives a shit about these terrible movies.
Well, it's Nicolas Cage, you know, it's the same thing.
Right. Nick Cage is the same way.
Made some kind of like devil's pact of like, we're just going to make as many bad movies as possible, but totally commit to them for the rest of our lives.
I can't watch Gotti though, for the life of me. And I have sat through some bad movies.
I watched Gotti. I went to see Gotti in the theaters.
Oh my God. So what was that? I
mean, there'd be less suited director to Gotti than Kevin Connolly. I mean, E from Entourage is trying to be Scorsese and it's just awful. I mean,
they had big name directors directing that movie. It ended up with Kevin Connolly
to do it. Yeah. Barry Levinson was supposed to do it.
Right.
And then he dropped out and they're like, who can we get? How about E from Entourage? All right. I mean, they shot it in Cincinnati. It doesn't look like New York. It's like he has no idea. At one point, they're trying to set like 70s atmosphere, and the theme from Shaft comes on the soundtrack. And you're like, you can't use Shaft in another movie. That's Shaft.
Oh, my
God. It's just terrible.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit through it. It feels to me like when that movie came out, and I haven't seen it. But when a movie goes through a bunch of A-list directors,
right,
and no offense to Kevin Connolly, but ends up at Kevin Connolly, offense
to Kevin Connolly. Right. He's terrible.
That to me says the producers fell in love with the script. Hang in there with me on this. or the Gotti family agreed to the script and they were so in love with it. They're like, we're not changing the script. And Barry Levinson's like, we have an idea here, but this script is garbage. It's trash. Right. Rewrite it. And they're like, well, we can't rewrite it. And then you end up with Kevin Connolly.
Yeah. Well, here's a controversial opinion for you. Mm. John Travolta, have you seen The Fanatic?
Oh, with Devon Sawa and him. Yeah. It was good. I liked it, actually.
He just won Worst Actor at the Razzies. I thought he was great.
I thought it was good, and I thought he was great in it.
And what's interesting is, you know, he's playing a character who's on the autism spectrum, and his son, who died, was autistic.
Yeah.
And to me, the performance felt very real, very grounded, very sincere in a way that I haven't seen him do in a long time. And everyone just trashed it because they're like, oh, it's another Travolta movie.
It's so weird, too, because they trashed because of Fred Durst. But I'll tell you something. Devon Sawa, actually, is interesting. He's kind of a cult figure on Twitter. Because he's really funny and sharp. Yeah. And he used to be a famous child actor. He's doing a lot of really good VOD work. His VOD movies have been interesting and good. They did that third Stallone movie, The Extraction. The Escape Plan? Yeah, the third Escape Plan.
Yeah.
It's actually good. And it's from the guy that directed, what's the Ed Burns De Niro movie? 15 Minutes. Yeah, and I'm watching it, and I'm like, man, the second one was awful. I didn't like the first one with Schwarzenegger and Stallone.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and you know what?
Love prison movies.
Right. This isn't bad. This is a B film, but it has the heart and soul of it. And I watched The Fanatic. I thought it was a good movie, actually. I don't know why Fred Durst is... Yeah, I guess it's you and me.
Why we are friends. You and I are both people in America who like The Fanatic, but I will defend it. You know, the other thing that I loved was American Dreamer with Jim Gaffigan. I don't know if you've seen that.
I haven't yet, but it does look really good.
It's one. I put it on my 10 best list.
Gaffigan's a great actor.
Gaffigan is a terrific dramatic actor.
Yeah.
It's another one of these really dark, twisted, Coen Brothers-esque. Actually, Derek Borte, the director, is now making a film with Russell Crowe that I think is going to be great.
Oh,
that's
wow.
coming out. Yeah, yeah.
Russell Crowe's due for a comeback.
Yeah, well, he was great in the... You there?
Sorry, you cut out for a bit, Bruce.
Yep. Did you watch The Loudest Voice?
I have not seen The Loudest Voice yet. And that's what I was going to ask you about. How was that?
Much of the bombshell was like a total waste of time, basically.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, did not like Bombshell
at
all. Some
good performances, but Loudest Voice is much more interesting because they have more time to go into it. It's not as glib as Bombshell. And Russell Crowe is fantastic because I think he, as crazy as he is, kind of sympathized on a level with Roger Ailes that made it not a cartoonish villain, you know?
Well, and that was my problem with Bombshell is Jay Roach is not the director to sympathize with any of those characters.
Right.
So the movie lacks sympathy. And to have written the Margot Robbie character basically as how Jay Roach feels about the situation, because that's what she is.
Yeah.
I just found the whole thing glib and a pat on the back for yay Hollywood when you didn't do anything to begin with. It's like all these people that all of a sudden... I'm not going to name names, but I know some big directors who have gone on Instagram and Twitter and have been joyously cheering for the fact that Harvey Weinstein's in jail for the next 23 years, which we all are, if that scenario holds up.
Yeah.
But what I find interesting, and this is what I'm talking about, where it's the hooray for Hollywood, glib, pat on the back, is where were you when it was going on?
Right.
You didn't do press and say... This is how evil Harvey is. You know, it's like when all these stories came out about Harvey, it was like, wait a minute. Why didn't you tell these stories at the time?
Right.
Where were you?
Right.
And I'm not talking about the women. I'm talking about the men. All these men that are going on Twitter patting themselves on the back. I don't blame the women for not telling their stories. I blame the men who are like all celebratory all of a sudden. And I'm like, I didn't even know you didn't like the guy. I didn't know you had a problem with him. And that's kind of how I feel about this movie, which is like the Jay Roaches of the world. Where was your loud voice while this was going on? We've known about Roger Ailes for years.
Right. Well, the problem with the movie is Jay Roach, because it was written by the same guy who wrote The Big Short.
Right.
And it could have been his Big Short, but Adam McKay didn't direct it. It was an Adam McKay movie without Adam McKay. You know, Vice I thought was great. Big Short I thought was great. I know McKay's involved with Succession and I haven't stuck with it, but I feel like McKay can do those kind of like cutting social satires and have it still
not just
be a cartoon. Whereas Jay Roach, you know, doesn't have that ability.
I was shocked when you liked Vice because there wasn't a movie I hated more.
Really?
I hated that. I think I told you I saw it like 6 months before everyone else. So to be fair, I never saw the finished product. I saw like the 2.5-hour director's cut. And there was a song and dance number in it, like all this kind of stuff that I heard was not in the final movie. But to me, Vice screamed of the biography of a Wikipedia page. I didn't learn anything new from it. I didn't like anything. I just thought like, I just feel like when you make these movies 10 years after they matter, why do I care? What am I learning?
You didn't think Christian Bale was unbelievably good?
The acting was fantastic in the movie. The acting was great. I just thought the script was boring. I just thought it was I sat next. I sat a couple seats down from Adam McKay when I watched it, and I was so embarrassed by this movie that when I went out into the lobby And I mean, I know how it is to make a good movie and a bad movie, so I'm not trying to shit on him. I've been there. But I went out to the lobby and I went to the bathroom, and then he was standing next to me at the urinals, and I'm like, oh, I can't avoid this. And he looked at me, and I'm like, he's going to ask me what I thought of the movie. And I just bolted. I left. Because I couldn't be honest with him. But it was just like, and you know what? Maybe we should, I want to end on this conversation, because I've been meaning to ask you. I've been meaning to call you and ask you about this. You like The Way Back. Now, let me preface once again. I saw The Way Back before they did reshoots on it. When I saw The Way Back, the entire audience, including the producers, did not like the film. Gavin O'Connor, I know to this day, does not like the final film.
Really?
I know, yes, I know, I can't tell you how I know this, but I know Gavin O'Connor, when they were doing the marketing and the promotion for the movie, said it's not even his movie anymore, he doesn't give a shit. Now, the reviews are great, so maybe Gavin cares again all of a sudden, I don't know. The review, it was like when my buddy Joe Carnahan, 2-3 years ago, he wrote off Bad Boys 3, and then it made a bajillion dollars, and Joe's like, thank you. Thank you very much. So who knows? When it's a success, all of a sudden people love it again. But I know Gavin didn't like it. I had a major problem with, in the version I saw, Ben Affleck basically went to rehab for 2 days and was cured.
And
they may have changed it.
Yeah.
And as someone who's dealt with a lot of alcoholics in their life, that rang so false to me. It was very Hollywood, though, because Hollywood AA is different than AA in the rest of the world.
Right.
Hollywood AA is that A-list movie star's house with A-list people around them and their friends. In the real world, you go to a church and there's a bunch of people that put shotguns in their mouths. Because they're depressed. Like, it's totally different. So for me, The Way Back was a really great Ben Affleck performance.
Yes.
Wrapped up in a movie that no one understands what alcoholism really is. Now, tell me what you liked about it and sell me on how it's different for you.
We don't disagree that much. I mean, to me, by far and away, the best thing in the movie is Ben Affleck. I think it's the best performance he's maybe ever given. It seemed like the most honest, realistic, coming from his heart kind of performance. The rest of the movie I can pretty much do without. I mean, it's Hoosiers light,
Students
have no personalities at all. The ex-wife has no personalities at all. The two actors who I thought came across well, other than Ben Affleck, were Al Madrigal.
Yeah, Al Madrigal's great in it. Yep.
And Mikaela Watkins, who I loved on Saturday Night Live, and she got fired after one season, as his sister-in-law, who plays this very passive-aggressive. It's not a great movie. To me, my line on it is, it's the Joe Biden of movies. You know, it's like, it's corny, it's old-fashioned, it has obvious flaws, but, you know, at the end of the day, it kind of gets the job done. You know, you kind of... it's kind of what you want right now, which is just comfort food, because it's so familiar. It's like, the basketball coach redemption movie at this point is, beyond a cliche. You know, it's Glory Road, it's Coach Carter, it's all those movies. But to me, the only thing that makes it really worth seeing is Ben Affleck. And I don't like Ben Affleck, frankly. You know, I mean, as an actor, I've liked some of the films he's directed, not the last one, Live by Night, but I mean, Argo, that was very good, and Gone Baby Gone, and The Town was okay, but
Gone Baby Gone Baby Gone's a masterpiece. I love Gone Baby Gone.
Yeah. But to me, Casey Affleck is the great actor in that family, whatever you think of him personally.
Sure.
And Ben Affleck is,
Ben Affleck's the movie star, Casey's the actor.
Yeah,
that's really what it is.
Frontier on Netflix?
I have not.
Triple Frontier is fantastic.
Really? You liked it a lot? Because I know people were hit and miss on it.
No, it's a great action movie. I love the director, J.C. Shandor, the guy who did Most Violent Year.
Yeah, with Oscar Isaacs,
Lost with Robert Redford. It's a terrific movie, and it's kind of like a modern-day Treasure of the Sierra Madre. It's like greed corrupting these guys, putting on doing a hit on these special forces guys who've been screwed over by the government, and are now going to like take down this drug hacienda. It is terrific. I absolutely recommend it.
There was just the thing I heard about that people complained was Ben Affleck doesn't show up till like halfway through the movie. And I'm like, well, that's not always a bad thing.
I don't think that's even true either.
Not sure if it is either, but someone told me he's like not as in it as they were hoping. I've met different kinds of Ben Affleck fans, weirdly enough. Like there's the obsessive kind.
Yeah.
They're like in love with him. There's the kind that just kind of like him because he's a cool dude. And then there's people that really don't like him as an actor at all.
Okay.
That's a good way to end then. What's weird is I think we pretty much agree on the way back, except I think Drew and I, when we saw it, we looked at each other and we were just kind of bored. And like, I did like the twist in the third act, but then I thought they didn't go the way I was hoping they were going to go with it. And I don't want to ruin what the twist is, but
yeah, I thought it was kind of manipulative, frankly. I didn't think they needed it, but
that's what I'm saying. So I thought the twist was good, but then I thought they went a very manipulative route with it.
Yeah, I agree. But, it'll be probably on video next week now since all the movie theaters are closed across America. So,
going to watch The Hunt on demand this week. I'm looking forward to catching Betty Gilpin, like you said.
She's great. The movie is not. She is great.
All right. Well, I'll watch it for her. Movies are still my cup of tea because like you and I said, and this is a good way to wrap up the episode. Like you and I said, I could watch 7 seasons of something, but I don't want to be disappointed for the last 4. With a movie, you're in, you're out. And if it's crap, it's an hour and a half of your life.
Exactly. I'm with you on that.
Well, Bruce, thanks so much for doing this. And thank you for sharing with us the shows that you're watching during your ice or what shows people should be watching during their isolation. And thank you. It's so great to catch up with you.
It's always a pleasure to talk to you, Matt.
All right, man. Good talking to you, Bruce. And to anyone that wants to follow us once again at Matt Aaron Show on Twitter and at the Facebook, The Matthew Aaron Show, and on Spotify, you could find all our episodes and you can catch up on episodes that Bruce has been on and many others. And we will be back later this week. I have even more for you. I believe we're talking to Sunil Perkish, who produced Salt and Enchanted and some other big movies. We got Mike McGrail coming on, I believe, who is a really great writer who's done a lot. Do it again sooner than later.